Well, whichever them is convenient to me at the moment.
Wicked man, he just avoided.
Well, you gave a good illustration of my point. Yeah, he said that Europe is flat because, you know, that's true of all of the Netherlands, and Europe is mountainous, that's true of Switzerland. The same kind of nonsense results when you say things that are true about copyrights, or you say something else that's true about patents, because they're totally different, but you say intellectual property each time. And the best way to avoid... You see, the generalization of Europe is at least useful for some things. And people know that Europe actually contains various countries which have different cultures, different terrain, and different histories. So the generalization, quote, Europe, unquote, is of more use and not so confusing. But people haven't realized that, quote, intellectual property rights, unquote, is just as much of a lumping together as, quote, Europe, unquote. They really get confused that there's one thing called intellectual property and that you can say sensible things about it all at once. So the kinds of foolish generalizations that people wouldn't really say about Europe, because they know it's not true, they say equally foolish things about intellectual property and they don't know it's not true. So the best way to help avoid this, since there's almost nothing it's useful to say about, quote, intellectual property, unquote, is not to use the term. Unfortunately, the European Commission and the European Parliament didn't realize how foolish it is to try to deal with copyright law and patent law and trademark law altogether. There's a big propaganda campaign to pretend that they're all one issue. So they adopted this directive, which mostly does harmful things when you consider computer users. And the one thing it seems to be designed to do is criminalize peer-to-peer software, just the software itself, regardless of what you do with it. So that's another directive that Norway should veto. So I guess I have said enough. I couldn't understand what the person from Electronic Frontier Norway was saying. If he hasn't already explained to you how you can get involved in helping to prevent the application of the EUCD, then I hope he'll come up and say it now, because you've all got to get involved in this. They're going to consider this in October. And they need to understand why this directive is wrong. So, after the questions, I'm going to hand out some stickers. And I've got these contact cards. If you want the Free Software Foundation to occasionally send you some mail, and you can put down your information and give me one of these. And I've also got some key rings and pins to sell to raise funds. I couldn't tell whether to say funds or money, so I said funny. Also, if you want to become an associate member of the FSF, you can do it online or you can do it through one of these cards. So ask me for one of them if you want one. But before that, I'd like to answer questions. Now, my ears don't work quite as well as they should, so please speak very loud and clear. Questions?
Very much for the consumers, let me say, of artistic works, of books, of music, and for the consumers to pay a little bit to support the artists. And on the other hand, the whole issue is bottom of the issue is shouldn't be copyright or open. Anyways, what I'm saying is you're arguing for that the public should pay small bits to the artists.
I actually know. I suggested two possible ways that we could increase the amount that we support artists. But I didn't argue for them. I presented them as possibilities.
Yes. Okay.
I'm not saying we should do this.
I'm trying to get my point across. So
okay.
I'm expressing myself very badly. I'm trying to switch between Norwegian and English. And on the one hand, so let's say that the system for small payments to artists starts to develop and takes a whole snowball. But really, why should we fight copyright? Because the artists will choose not the publishers, but they will choose self-publishing.
This won't be enough. Let me tell you why. First of all, there are many things that have already been published, and we should be free to copy them too. So, there are musicians starting to reject the system of prohibiting copying. There are musicians who put their work on their websites and say, please download this and please share this. And suppose over the next 10 years that catches on, then look at all the recordings that won't have been made that way.
Right.
What are we going to do about them?
The system may roll over very fine.
I don't think so. I think what will happen is that the parasites that are selling us those things now will continue doing so, will continue restricting them to squeeze every last euro out of them. But the other thing is, we don't know that musicians are going to do this in large numbers. There may be many musicians. Consider, for instance, the superstars. The superstars are the ones who really do get rich from the present system. And a lot of them are going to want to continue being rich. They may not go along with the other musicians and start giving their permission for copying. And look at the musicians who are under contract already to a record company. As long as their contract continues, they don't have a choice. The record companies don't permit the musicians to publish any music in any other way. So this really won't work.
I'm saying that these artists, not the ones that are already established with contracts, I'm saying the artists are coming up. They're in they're 15 years old, they're 20, they're moving into their careers.
They may do this, that's right.
Open source because of your leadership.
I don't do open source. I haven't led anybody towards open source unless they've made a mistake, unless they've misunderstood. What I do is called free software, free as in freedom. The term open source was launched by people who wanted freedom as an issue to be forgotten. Now, if they failed, you know, if people say open source and they still understand it's a question of freedom, well, I'm glad that they failed to cover up freedom. I'm glad that it refuses to be buried. But still, if you want to talk about what I do, it's free. The point is, yes, this might happen. It might solve the problem. Why should we wait? And why should we accept the uncertainty? This might partly solve the problem, but who knows?
Have you followed with the publisher? His name is Cory Doctorow.
I know him.
And he's released several books.
Yes.
And
he says he doesn't think he's lost any money because of this.
At the same time, he's published with a paperback.
Yes, right. I'm in favor of things like that.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm in favor of things like that. I talk with people who are doing these things, and I try to encourage that. But just because that is proceeding to a certain extent is no reason why we should allow the prohibitions we have to continue, and is no reason why we should allow them to be made even more restrictive. Why let that happen?
Yes. My name is Petter Einarsson, and I have two questions for you. First one is, given money, what should we do to stop software patents and the patent regime in Europe changing? And the other one, you said in the start of your speech that copying a chair is not really possible and not really an interesting thing to think about, but these days we have 3D printers capable of producing,
for example. Yes, they're very expensive. And they don't make the same material as this chair.
Yet.
I'm not interested in trying to decide on legislation today for some time, decades in the future. If that technological change happens, it will create new political issues. And I will leave it to that time to try to settle those issues. It's hard enough to adapt copyright law to the situation we're in. There's no reason to try to adapt it to a future situation that we may or may not reach. Now, as for software patents, I should explain that, first of all, patents and copyrights have nothing in common, is the first thing. Whatever you know about copyright law, never expect that that's true for patent law. Chances are it's not. So, software idea patents or logic patents are prohibitions on using an idea. These patents are issued by a patent office. Now, Norway has its own patent office, which is independent. So, if they were in Norway, they would be issued by the Norwegian patent office. For other countries in Europe, most of them, they would be issued by the European patent office. The European Union is considering a directive about patents applying to computer-related inventions, which means covering an idea that involves how to do something with a computer. Now, this stretches from things that are basically physical systems, such as, say, a system to process rubber, where a computer controls the machinery. On the other hand, they could go to things like purely software ideas, like displaying how much of the job is done by displaying a bar on the screen, and it goes from 0 to 100, and the bar gradually fills in as the job gets done. This is a patent actually issued by the European Patent Office and illustrates what software idea patents are like. And then you would get to business method patents, where the idea is use a computer that will do transactions with people in a certain way, according to certain rules. That would be a business method patent. Well, these are both logic patents. And basically, if one gets authorized, the other gets authorized too. So, this directive was originally proposed to authorize these patents. A very strong grassroots political campaign was launched and led by the organization FFII. And FFII convinced the European Parliament to vote against logic patents. The Parliament amended the directive over and over and over and over at every point to block off, to exclude logic patents. And then the Council of Ministers in May tentatively voted to allow them. Well, FFII is now trying to convince some of the countries in the EU to change their vote. The final vote will be this month. If a couple more small countries change their votes, then the Council of Ministers will uphold the Parliament's decision and we will have won, at least as regards this directive. They may come back in a few years and try again some other way. Who knows? They don't give up. They've got lots of money. It's mainly the megacorporations and their puppet government in the U.S. that are pushing for this. If the Council of Ministers stays with its current plan, then we have a chance to persuade the European Parliament. And if we can get the new parliament to vote the same way the old one did, then it will not be clear. Then there will be more steps to be done in order to reach a final directive. Or maybe there will be no directive. So the fight will go on. Meanwhile, If we lose and a directive comes out that authorizes logic patents, it will be vital for Norway to veto this directive, because you can't write substantial software in a country that allows logic patents without your program infringing dozens or hundreds of patents. I used to say, look at your word processor. It probably has hundreds of features. Each of them is at least one idea, maybe several ideas together. And there could be more ideas inside that you can't see as features. So there are thousands of ideas in your word processor, thousands of things that might already be patented by someone else. So how is anybody going to develop a word processor? Well, the megacorporations can do it because they own a lot of patents and they make other megacorporations cross-license with them. So only the megacorporations will be able to develop software. I used to ask you to just estimate that if there are thousands of ideas, there might be hundreds of patents. But now I don't have to ask you to estimate, because someone did a study. He looked at Linux, which is the kernel of the GNU/Linux operating system, and found 286 different U.S. patents that cover ideas used in Linux. And Linux, someone else estimated recently, at 0.25%. That is less than, it's a one part in 400 of the whole system. So how many patents would cover the whole system? We can roughly estimate 100,000. You can see that the details of the individual patents don't even matter. It doesn't matter whether they've been carefully examined. You know, if the patent office did a better job, maybe it would only have issued 50,000 of those patents. If it did a worse job, it would maybe issue 200,000, right? Does it matter? No. You can't solve this problem by looking at individual patents, just as you can't get rid of malaria by swatting mosquitoes. You've got to change the system. The system should not allow this kind of patent. If you want to help in this campaign, contact FFII. FFII is the leader in this. They've done a very good job. So look at their website, which is ffii.org, and then it'll tell you how to contact them if you want to help. There's also a site called softwarepatents.co.uk, which has a very clear explanation in English about the problem.
Yeah, could you possibly elaborate a bit on the cross-licensing system used by big software companies? You see there is a gentleman's agreement.
It's not a gentleman's agreement. It's basically, suppose, well, IBM wrote an article that you could read. It's in Think Magazine, issue number 5, 1990, which is about exactly this. IBM at the time had 9,000 U.S. patents. So if some other company had a patent and said to IBM, you can't do that, we have a patent, IBM would say, well, let's look through our 9,000 patents and see what covers your products or your operations. And they would find some, and then they'd say, let's sign a cross-license. A cross-license is a contract that they sign, and it's normally a secret, so we don't see what these contracts say, we just know they exist. We're... maybe one company pays the other a certain amount of money, and each one is permitted to do the things patented by the other.
Yeah, but the gentleman agreement thing might be that they say to each other that we license each other patents, so we thereby block out this free software. Is that not
the case? I don't know. IBM may not be trying to destroy free software. After all, they're using and encouraging their customers to use the GNU/Linux system. They don't call it that. They call it Linux, but it is the GNU/Linux system. So IBM probably isn't going to sue us. But on the other hand, even IBM can't stop everybody else from suing us, even assuming IBM decides to try.
Yeah, I'd like to raise another question. I mainly agree with what you said about compensation of musicians and so on. I'm a member of the Norwegian Writers Union, and some of us there proposed a system for compensating writers, which is very like the one you said. In fact, we have most of the juridical things and so in place because we can use compensation laws created for the Norwegian libraries. But I'm a bit skeptical about the thing you said about taxation because of some experiences we had in Norway where the Department of Culture tried to make a tax which should compensate for copying, which would be a bit tax. That is, they should tax media that could store information according to how many bits they contain.
And what was the problem? Did they really do it, or did they just propose it?
They proposed it several times, and I wrote an article about it about 6 years ago when I said that in 5 years' time, this means that a hard disk will cost you some $10 million or something like that. So my question to you is, I didn't get exactly what kind of taxing system you proposed.
I'm not proposing any specific one.
I'm not saying we should do this.
I'm suggesting it is a possibility.
Because this question of a bit tax has been raised several
times. Well, but please listen, you are talking about a very specific proposal.
A very bad proposal, not
right, but I'm not advocating a specific way to calculate it. But, you know, one idea would be that you could adjust the amount of this tax. You know, you could tax blank CDs a certain amount. And if later on another medium replaces, you know, people start using blank DVDs, you could tax that by a different amount. You know, you don't have to maintain a rigorous proportionality to the number of bits. It could be the goal would be to raise a certain amount of tax from society as a whole.
There has been a tax on blank CDs in Norway. About 10 years ago, you paid $20 for one CD. And I'm not sure how much of that got to the fund, but they stopped it because it didn't work.
Well, $20 for one blank CD was obviously a lot of money. And it's sort of ridiculous. If you compare that with the amount of money musicians get if you buy a CD, which is 4% of the sales price as an estimate, we could say, well, what is that likely to be? You know, that might be something analogous to $1 worth.
But the problem was that you had to pay this tax above if you wanted to copy your CD or if you wanted to make a backup of your own personal data.
Why is that a problem?
Well, it depends.
If it were $20, that's a problem, of course. But suppose it were a smaller amount.
The $20 was the same price on the CD.
I understand. Yeah. The point is that making a blank CD costs so much more than it really should have cost. Clearly causes problems. But suppose the tax were smaller. Suppose the tax were, you know, like, suppose it were 20% of what the CD would normally have cost. This will apply regardless of how you use the CD. So this means that people who are writing some of their personal data will support musicians a little bit. So what?
We have a tax on blank video VCR cassettes.
Yeah.
And that goes into something called the Cassette Fund, which does sponsor some music and sponsors some...
Sounds good to me.
And it also sponsors people writing about the salmon industry. So it actually does...
So what? Is this supposed to be a problem? You see, I've never understood it. Some people seem to think that if backing up some of their data or software means that they pay a little bit of money to some musicians, that something evil is happening. I don't see any evil there.
Many years ago, I used to be a music drummer. And it's not true that, at least here in Norway, people don't make money from touring. You lose money on touring, and you...
do earn some money on record sales, but what you earn the most money of is airplay. Because every time the radio stations play your music, they pay a fee to something called Tono, and they compile lists of how much music of.
Well, I'm not proposing any change in that. That's commercial use.
Well, the problem is that this system is about as corrupt as the system, as the big music corporations. For instance, it's so made that way that...
Please, this seems like it's a somewhat of a side issue.
We all know that.
The system may be good in principle, but corrupt in practice, but that doesn't really change anything I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm running out of time, so I think we can only take one more question. So the last question.
Thank you. I was pondering on your proposal to cut down on the copyright time. I believe it's a good idea. This will have an application on commercial software, because the commercial software being sold is being an issue of copyrighted material.
Well, actually, for software, they usually restrict it much more with a supposed contract that they call the end-user license agreement. So, in fact, if those went out of copyright, it wouldn't change anything. Now, one could, of course, say that, you know, that there's a... One could restrict that by law, and perhaps should. Oh, well, sorry. I mean, there's just...
Would they stand up?
Well, I've got it. I have interviews to do, and I have almost 300 messages to answer, so I've got to go. Stickers over there, just go there and take as many stickers as you could make good use of. If you want some of the key rings or pins, come over here to me.
I have a short announcement before everyone leaves. If you want to learn more about problems, Scott Collins from the Mozilla Project will talk next week, next Thursday, same time, same place, about the issues of intellectual property and how they affect us all.
Oh, very bad idea.
We in the Norwegian Linux User Group and our foundation are going to fund some work to try to affect the software patent. And if you have any ideas and want to help out, please contact me. Thank you.
Just one more thing to say. Anybody who is under 26 would like to become a member of the ETHEL.com. And also, I would like to say a few words about Stortinget. ETHEL skal arrangere konferanse på Stortinget, og vi har sendt det sammen med Venstre I midten av oktober. Så det ganske store ting der.